Broadcasting to New York City, Los Angeles, Chicago, Sydney, London, and around the world, this is Trumpet Radio Live.
Thanks for joining us here on Trumpet Radio, Trumpet Radio Live, 101.3 KPCG, and online we're at kpcg.fm. Coming up on this weekend edition, you've probably heard of Facebook. Most everybody has heard of it and is probably on it. They're going to go ahead and change some of their policies and what they're trying to do. We have a look at that. Also, the economy in the United States. Some cases it's hard to find jobs. Sometimes there are too many jobs depending on where people live in the U.S. We'll take a look at that and also some headlines. That and more this edition of Trumpet Radio Live.
This is Trumpet Radio Live.
Thanks for joining us here on Trumpet Radio, 101.3 KPCG, kpcg.fm online. If you type that into your browser, you can find us there anywhere in the world that you have internet connection. And if you'd like to follow us on Twitter, please do that at kpcgfm. And you can email us if you'd like to as well. Any comments or anything you'd like to send along, comments at kpcg.fm. We're happy to take a look at those for you. I'm Dwight Falk. Thanks for joining me here on this weekend edition of Trumpet Radio Live. Hopefully you've had a good, productive, successful week as we do head into the weekend. A lot happening around the world. A few headlines to look at. This one will not be surprising, but it's a continued trend. Iran has held anti-Israel rallies across the country on Friday, with protesters condemning Israel's occupation of Palestinian territories, as they would say it anyway, to mark Al-Quds Day, a historic Arabic name for Jerusalem. Marchers in Tehran carried anti-Israel and anti-U.S. placards and burnt the flags of the respective countries. And they do this pretty often, it seems like, especially once a year, obviously, but even more than that, it seems like. And so they don't keep their feelings secret, that's for sure. Iran also erected a huge digital countdown to display in Tehran's Palestine Square, counting down to when they say Israel will cease to exist. So they have this clock that's counting down to Israel's destruction, 8,411 days and counting. So they have a very specific amount of time there. In 2015, Iran's supreme leader Ayatollah Ali Khamenei claimed that after 25 years or by 2040, there would no longer be a state of Israel. And I don't think he'll be alive at that point. But anyway, that's his goal that he has put out there by 2040, no longer having a state of Israel. So it's about 8,411 days from Friday, I guess, when they got the clock going. Iran also displayed three surface-to-surface ballistic missiles, including the Zulfiqar, the type that Iran used this week to target the Islamic State group in Syria. I believe they launched that, this week, it said. Another missile on display was the Qadr, with a range of 2,000 kilometers, 1,250 miles, that could reach both Israel and U.S. bases in the region. So they're setting up this countdown clock to the destruction of Israel. They're showing off missiles that can reach some of the regions over there. Very aggressive, very hostile. And we can't believe we tried to make some sort of a deal with this government here in the U.S. What was that, a couple of years ago? Unbelievable. They certainly don't keep their feelings secret. Iran says Al-Quds Day is an occasion to express support for the Palestinians and emphasize the importance of Jerusalem for Muslims. Iran doesn't recognize Israel and staunchly backs militant groups, including Palestinian Hamas and Lebanon's Hezbollah. They do more than just, back them. They certainly do a lot to support those terrorist groups. So not a surprise that Iran does that. They come out and they do that on this day every year, and it seems like they do it several times throughout the year as well. But again, it's about time somebody paid attention to them, I guess, and what they're actually saying and what they're doing. And of course, if you follow thetrumpet.com, you know that there's a really good indication as to what group of nations is going to pay more attention to Iran here in the near future, and that'll be a European group. So a lot more information about that at thetrumpet.com. Of course, we have Watch Jerusalem coming up this weekend as well with your host Brent Nachtigall, and he's over in that region, and has a real good look at what's going on from the ground level over there. So make sure you listen for that program coming up this weekend here on KPCG. Also here in the U.S., a lot of heat, of course, in the Southwest, and wildfires happening also because of that. A wildfire near a southern Utah ski town has already forced hundreds of people to evacuate, has now doubled in size with high winds and driven out residents of 400 additional homes. Authorities said on Thursday, the blaze is one of several burning in the western U.S. as extreme heat makes it difficult for firefighters to tamp down the flames. Very difficult job being a firefighter, of course, and when it's that hot as it is out there, makes the job even more difficult. Lots of reports coming out of different regions there in the southwest U.S. of just death and burns, even from just the heat itself. Las Vegas area, Phoenix, they have had close to record heat this week. So just the heat alone is causing problems. And then a lot of times what happens is you have these wildfires spark up. In Utah, new evacuations were ordered east of the fire's epicenter in the tiny mountain town of Bryan Head, with residents nearby and people visiting a popular fishing area also asked to leave to avoid danger. And more than 700 other people have been out of their homes since last Saturday, so just about a week or so. Someone using a torch to burn weeds ignited the fire near the Alpine community that is home to the Bryan Head Resort and close to several national monuments and parks in Utah's Red Rock Country. So it's amazing how that happens. It seems like every time a fire sparks up, somebody's burning weeds or they're burning something. When it's dry, when it's hot, when it's windy. Obviously didn't intend to do it, I'm sure, but it can cause a lot of problems. So it has caused some problems there in Utah, and just really dry and hot out there in the Southwest. You've heard of Facebook, I assume, and potentially are on it. Quite a few people are. Well, they're trying to change some of their policies, and they're trying to change the way they're doing a few things. They're making a lot of money, that's for sure. These different industries are really increasing in value, these different companies within the tech industry. Before we get into this main Facebook story, it's interesting to note that Facebook stock, since the company went public in May 2012, is gone up 288%. So if you bought some of that early on, that's good for you. But other companies as well have grown quite a bit. The increase of the price of Amazon stock since the start of the current bull market in March 2009, it's gone up 1,306%. Amazon's been in the news, been very active. Increase in the price of Netflix stock since March 2009, 2,593%. Amazing. And the increase in the price of Google stock since March 2009, a modest 491%. So the tech industry, some people think it's a bubble and it's going to burst. Other people say, no, it's not. But in any event, it's gone up quite a bit over the last few years. And Facebook's been one of those big companies, but they've had some problems lately because they're trying to determine, how do they grow their business for one, but also how do they get rid of some of the hate rhetoric, I guess, that would be on there, terrorism, other things like that being promoted on Facebook. Facebook Live has had problems where people have been streaming live videos of horrific events. So they're trying to get a hold of this. At Facebook, mere sharing, they say, is getting old. Finding deeper meaning in online communities is the next big thing. So that's what they're hoping to do. They want to have deeper meaning in online communities such as Facebook. CEO Mark Zuckerberg talked about this, and here is his vision for Facebook.
I used to think that if we just gave people a voice and helped some people connect, that would make the world a lot better all by itself. And in a lot of ways it has. But, you know, today when we look around, our society is still very divided. Right? So now I believe that we have a responsibility to do even more. Right? Not simply connect the world, but also work to bring the world closer together. We also need to build communities to support us in new ways, too. All right, so for 10 years now, our mission has been to make the world more open and connected. And we are always going to focus on this. We're always going to work to give more people a voice and to help us connect. But now, we want to do more on top of that, too. So today we're going to set a new mission to set our course as a company for the next decade. And the idea behind our new mission is to bring the world closer together. The full formal mission statement is going to be to give people the power to build community to bring the world closer together. And that mission reflects that this isn't something that we can do by ourselves. Right? The only way that we can do this is by empowering people around the world to build community, just like all of you are, and to bring people closer together. So this is our challenge. We have to build a world where every single person has a sense of purpose and community. That's how we're going to bring the world closer together. We need to build a world where we care just as much about anyone, a person in India or in China or in Mexico or Nigeria, as we care about a person right here in Chicago. So now we're going to set a goal. We want to help 1 billion people join meaningful communities. And if we can do this, it will not only reverse the whole decline in community membership that we've seen for decades around the world, it's going to start to strengthen our overall social fabric and bring the world closer together.
Those are some comments made recently, or last day or so, by Facebook founder and CEO Jeff Zuckerberg, and or Mark Zuckerberg, sorry. It's as important as he is, I should get his name right, I suppose. He wants to bring more meaning, as he said, to its nearly 2 billion users. So there's 2 billion users there that are involved in Facebook, and a very popular online platform, of course. It's used for a lot of things, and certainly a lot of people are invested in it financially, but also just socially. And so he wants to shepherd all those users, 2 billion of them, into online groups that bring together people with common passions, problems, and ambitions, as he sees it. And much like the creation of Facebook itself, which is arguably the largest social engineering project in history, that shift could have broad and unanticipated consequences. Facebook will apply the same powerful computer algorithms that make its services so compelling to the task of boosting membership in, as they say, meaningful groups to more than 1 billion people within 5 years. So they're trying to get people into, I guess, some sort of community. It's an interesting thought. If successful, that would also encourage people to spend more time on Facebook, which would boost their profits. And they probably have some good intentions, but I'm sure they intend to make money as well. But the problem with that is just this idea of bringing all these people together and unifying people is that he doesn't talk anything about human nature, probably doesn't understand much about it. And in Amos, it says, "Can two walk together except they be agreed?" Amos 3 and verse 3. So it's a good question to ask. Well, if you just have two people, can they agree? Can they walk together if they're not agreed? Here you have 1 billion people, maybe 2 billion, I guess, if you look at all the Facebook users. And the thing is, people don't agree with each other. That's the issue. If you've been online recently and you've read a news story about almost anything, and then go and read the comments, what do you find? People just don't agree. They don't agree on anything. They don't agree on healthcare. They don't agree on politics, certainly. Very divisive here in the U.S. and around the world. Even the NBA draft, which just happened the last few days. People don't agree on anything. They just argue and bicker and fight. And so the idea of bringing people together in some sort of online community where they'll get along, 1 billion people, maybe 2 billion people, they probably want more. While it might be a good idea or an ideal, I don't think it can happen because people just don't agree. They constantly fight. They constantly bicker. over all the topics that are out there, whatever it may be. And so another question, too, is if you're going to bring a billion people together in an online community, is under who, though? I mean, who's the one that's deciding the direction of the community, or who's deciding what values they live by? Really interesting questions. And so, but they want to change their mission statement, I guess, and try to get more people into this sort of online community. He made the point there in his speech about caring about somebody in another part of the world as much as caring about somebody locally, which is a really good thought. But I don't know, if you watch the local news, do people care about people locally even? Doesn't seem that way. And we've had stories, too, about how people are not as apt to talk to each other anymore because they're on Facebook. So they're not even having as many conversations or getting to know people that are close to them because they're so involved in this social media. So some big ideas there, some big hopes, but ultimately I don't think it'll help people get along anymore than they currently do. But Facebook is going to try to do that. And of course, I'm sure they're going to try to have more profits. That's what they're ultimately looking for in a lot of ways. It is interesting, though, how people are filling up this maybe vacuum in their life, this hole in their life online, or they're trying to do that. There's a little write-up here from Fortune magazine. It was a question and answer with this lady, Tamara Mellon, and she's a co-founder of a Jimmy Choo, which is a pretty popular fashion brand. And they're talking to her about online and online fashion and so forth. But she brings up an interesting point that relates just to the online world in general. They ask her, what's your strategy for rebuilding your business? And she says, I relaunched last October as a direct-to-consumer brand. Now we just put new fashion pieces up every month, but we're also trying to build a community. So again, talking about community, they want to make these online communities. She says the way brands communicate with their customers is radically different today. Sports brands have done this incredibly well. This may sound weird, she says, but listen to this. She says, this may sound weird, but what people got from church in the past, they now get from brands like SoulCycle. Everyone's in there with a purpose. And so these online communities, people have similar interests, or they're trying to have similar interests. She says they're getting from that what they used to get from church. So that's just an interesting comment. It's a changing way that people are trying to, I guess, find meaning in life and find purpose. And a lot of people are doing it online, or in this case, with some sort of material possession. So really an interesting change, I guess, in the way that people are living and the idea of community. We had a story just a couple weeks ago about how somebody wrote about how they don't even know their neighbors anymore. They don't interact with them like they used to. People kind of stay to themselves. And yet, at the same time, people are trying to have these online communities, and Facebook is trying to be at the forefront of that. So we'll see how that goes, but it is interesting. It is a changing way people are trying to interact with each other. Here's a statistic that's not a good one, but I thought it was interesting. This is from a write-up about the prison populations in the United States. And the highest segment of the population, or the segment of the population that has the biggest rise in people going to prison is actually women. And they say despite seasonal fluctuations in jail populations, data shows that the population of women has steadily increased. It's not good for anybody to be in prison, of course, but it's particularly bad in this situation because up to 80% of the women in prison are mothers, many with more than one child, and in many cases, they're the primary caregiver before they get arrested. So those children then have to go to foster care. Since 2010, the number of women incarcerated in jails is growing at a faster rate than at any other correctional population in the U.S. So that's not a good statistic. It's not good for anybody, obviously, but a lot of times there's single mothers, primary caregiver for the child, get into a bad situation of some kind, end up in jail, and then who's watching the kids? So it's a generational problem then that can increase as those kids then grow up in a bad situation. So anyway, not a good statistic there, but it's something kind of interesting, highlighting some of the trends in society. Here's a story that's a little bit different, and we've talked in the past, I guess, about some of these different shark attacks that have happened. They've been on the coastal areas, of course, and I don't know if there's more or less than usual, but it seems like there's been a few more, or they've been reported on more. That's not the only thing you have to worry about. Beavers. There's a spate of beaver attacks that has put swimmers on high alert in Switzerland. So Switzerland, if you're in Switzerland, and I don't know if we have listeners there. We have a lot online at kpcg.fm. Not sure if we have any from Switzerland area, but if you're taking a trip there, or if we have some listeners, any just interesting in general, because, you know, beavers, they have huge teeth, obviously. Wouldn't want to get bit by one. Never think of them really as a threat, but I guess they are. They say a burst of attacks by a hyper-aggressive beaver has put wild swimmers in Switzerland on high alert. Locals in the alpine city of Schaffhausen have been told to stay out of the water after two bathers were wounded by a single animal in the space of 1 week. So I guess it's just one beaver that's mad, apparently. An 8-year-old boy and an adult woman have so far fallen prey to the toothy mammal, which lives in the River Rhine. According to the newspaper, 20 Minuten, the beaver bit the boy once on the shoulder and once on the bottom before swimming away. That would be terrifying and very painful, I'm sure. And then the same evening, a woman was bitten on the leg and was hurt so severely she had to go to the hospital. Beavers are not known for mounting attacks on humans, but, of course, they can become aggressive if they feel that their nest is under threat. So I imagine they must have been swimming near the beaver nest. Maybe they didn't know it. Officials in Schaffhausen have confirmed that they will put beaver warning signs in the area to warn would-be swimmers to beware potential attacks. So I wouldn't mind getting my hand on one of those signs. I bet those would be pretty neat. I don't know what they'd look like, but some sort of a sign to warn you about a beaver attack. I guess you'd have to be able to decipher that pretty quickly. Maybe it'll just have the words on there. I don't know what the picture would be. Maybe a beaver with a circle and a line through it or something like that. But anyway, so that can happen. It's kind of strange, but I suppose any animal, if it feels like it is under attack, could do something like that. Interesting story there out of Switzerland. A couple of historical notes from the weekend in history that you might find interesting. 1509, Henry VIII was crowned King of England. Fairly famous or infamous king, I guess. Best known, in some circles anyway, for 6 marriages. And he had a disagreement with the Pope on the question of having an annulment to his first wife, Catherine of Aragon. And that led Henry to initiate the English Reformation, separating the Church of England from papal authority and appointing himself the supreme head of the Church of England. And, of course, he was excommunicated because of that. So some interesting things that happened there. 1922, over the weekend, the American Professional Football Association took the name the National Football League, which we're familiar with today. If players back then only knew the kind of money some people make today, they'd be probably very surprised. One of the quarterbacks just signed, I think it was a $25 million deal. Derek Carr from the L.A. Raiders, soon to be, they're the Oakland Raiders now, right? And they're soon to be the Las Vegas Raiders. Hard to keep it all straight where they're going. But that is a 1922 when the league started. It does seem, though, like players that played back then, I don't know, all the situations, but it seems like a lot of them lived quite a long time and didn't seem to have quite the same health issues that people have today after they get done playing football. So maybe not as big back then, maybe a little healthier, I'm not sure. Wore the leather helmets. It might be not a bad idea, actually, because you're not as apt to put your head into a bad situation. But anyway, 1922, so it's been going on for a long time. 1962, on this day, the U.S. Supreme Court ruled that the use of unofficial non-denominational prayer in public schools was unconstitutional. Didn't even know that was a ruling, but that's what they ruled in 1962. 1982, the U.S. Supreme Court ruled 5-4 that no president could be sued for damages connected with actions taken while serving as president of the United States. Probably good that they made that. Can you imagine how many lawsuits there would be today for just about any president after he was done? There would be too many to go through because people would feel that they were damaged, and maybe in some cases they were. How about triggering? Can you sue for being triggered? Maybe that's the next stage of things. And a really important thing that happened in 1991 here over the weekend, the Yugoslav republics of Slovenia and Croatia declared their independence from Yugoslavia. If you were alive during that time, you probably have some pretty vivid memories of that happening in the news. And, of course, it's really important to what's happening in Europe even today and what Russia is doing today and the way they feel about the EU and the U.S. And there's a lot of really important material about that at the trumpet.com about what happened over there in the former Balkans area. So some great videos about it, some really good write-ups about it. Really important history. Probably not talked about as much as it should be because it is so important. And that was in 1991. The Yugoslav republics of Slovenia and Croatia declared their independence from Yugoslavia. So make sure you go back and check out thetrumpet.com for some information about that in case you haven't looked at it in a while. You're listening to Trumpet Radio Live here on 101.3 KPCG. And we're online at kpcg.fm, too. We have a live link at thetrumpet.com. Appreciate you joining us on those various platforms. Some of the programming coming up this weekend, the Key of David program, that'll be coming your way. Also, the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. Jeremiah Jacques filling in today for Stephen Fleury, the regular host. Make sure you listen for his program. Lots of updates there about what's going on over in Asia, in that region, what you can expect to see happening there in the near future. They're definitely on the move and doing quite a bit. So listen for that Trumpet Daily Radio Show with your host, Jeremiah Jacques, this weekend. Also, stop and check out thetrumpet.com. Top story is ex-Barclays boss found guilty of fraud. Another corruption case undermines trust in the Anglo-Saxon-led financial system. Just seems like there's been quite a few of those sorts of cases recently. And this is another one. That's by David Vihill. Also, Lieber, The Biggest Con in Financial History by Robert Morley. You can find that also at thetrumpet.com. And then, of course, make sure that you sign up for the Trumpet Brief if you haven't done that yet. Quite a few people have, but there's a great opportunity to sign up for that if you haven't yet. It's free, and it gets sent to your email inbox basically every day or so. And what they do is give you an update about some things that are happening, news events that are important. And it's quick. You can go through it pretty easily, but get a lot of important information there. You can sign up for that. It's free, and it's at thetrumpet.com. Also this weekend, Watch Jerusalem, a new program there with Brent Noctegal, a new episode, and, of course, the Trumpet Hour Week in Review program. So lots coming up this weekend here on KPCG. If you got some time, we'd appreciate you spending that with us and listening to some of those programs. We'll be back after a short break and take a look at some things going on with the U.S. workforce, some interesting write-ups about the economy here in the United States. We'll be right back on Trumpet Radio Live, 101.3 KPCG.
Is summer vacation drying your brain into a wrinkled raisin? Plunge into something different. Join Dennis Leap, host of Just the Best Literature, for a scintillating summer of reading. Drench your mind with classics such as Jane Austen's Pride and Prejudice, Charles Dickens' Great Expectations, and Jules Verne's 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea. Be a part of reading and discussing to build a brawny brain. Yeah! JBL's Summer of Classics series begins June 26th. Just the Best Literature airs Mondays at 8 a.m. CDT on kpcg.fm and 101.3 in North Edmond, Oklahoma. Join us on Twitter at JBLiterature1 or on Facebook by searching Just the Best Literature to see news, facts, and creatively designed quotes. Also, leave comments and communicate with us. We want to hear from you. Just the Best Literature airs Mondays at 8 a.m. on kpcg.fm and 101.3 in North Edmond, Oklahoma.
You're listening to Trumpet Radio Live here on 101.3 KPCG and online at kpcg.fm. That was a preview there of the Just the Best Literature series coming up this summer, some of the classics. So make sure you do listen for that program. With your host, Dennis Leap. That's Mondays at 8 a.m. And then, of course, there's some replays throughout the week. You can find the schedule online at kpcg.fm. Also, the archives of those programs are available as well. So lots of ways you can reach out and listen to those programs and comment on them and be interactive with them if you'd like to be. I'm Dwight Falk. Thanks for joining me here on this weekend edition of Trumpet Radio Live. I think it was yesterday we talked about on that day in history, there was one of the longest flights in the world. It was a round the world trip. I think it was like 80 hours or something like that. And that was the first time that was offered. Here are the five longest haul routes on the planet today. Currently, if you're traveling a lot this summer, I hope you don't have to make these unless you really want to. But these are the longest flights right now. Johannesburg to Atlanta. You can do that by Delta. 8,439 miles. Quite a trip. Singapore to San Francisco. You can do that on Singapore Airlines and United. 8,446 miles. If you want to go from Dallas to Sydney, 8,578 miles. Dubai to Auckland, that's 8,824 miles. And the longest haul right now on the planet is Doha to Auckland, 9,032 miles. Qatar Airlines, or Airways, rather. So lots of long flights there. Hopefully you get a couple of meals and some drinks, and it's not too expensive because those are some long, long flights if you've got to make them, and sometimes people do. Some people really like that, like flying, but I think in most cases that might be a bit long for most people. Here's related to that, a report of the six of the world's top terminals. So if you have to fly frequently, you probably have your favorite terminal that you like to go to. There's only one that's in the United States, according to this write-up anyway. Washington Dulles in the U.S. That is one of the better terminals, they say. And the other ones are in China. Shenzhen Airport in China. These are going to be tough names. Bilbao Airport in Spain. Berlin Tegel Airport, that's in Germany. Queen Tamar Mistia. And that's in the country of Georgia. What a strange looking airport! They've got pictures of it. It looks like an L that's laying on its side. So it's a unique shaped building. And then the Madrid Barajas in Spain. So I probably butchered some of those names, but those are some of the best terminals, they say, in the world. The six best. So only one in the U.S. Washington Dulles, apparently. So I've been in some that are nice and some that are a little outdated, and they do need to be updated. And that's one of the things that President Trump talked about, was upgrading some of the infrastructure and the airports. So I don't know if he'll be able to do that, if there's the money to do that, but that is something that probably needs to be done. Here's a couple of quick little notes you might find interesting. If you ever go to, say, a thrift store or something like that, you may have the dream of buying something cheap and finding out it's very valuable. That happens sometimes. A diamond ring was bought for about $13 at a London flea market and ended up being sold at auction for $850,000. So obviously it was a real diamond, and the person selling it just didn't know what they had. $850,000, pretty good investment if you could swing something like that. There was a story recently, too, about a camera that somebody bought at a thrift store. And it had film in it that wasn't developed. And when they developed it, it was pictures of Mount St. Helens erupting that somebody had taken. Really fascinating. I think it was on Fox News last week. And if you get a chance to see that online, it's pretty cool to see these pictures of this giant eruption. And somebody just never developed the film. So I don't know if there's a lot of value on that, but it's certainly interesting. Also, another note, that recently the Puerto Ricans voted on whether the territory should become the 51st U.S. state. That was a June 11th referendum. I don't know if you heard about that or not. Only 23% of the Puerto Ricans voted, and 97% approved of it. So they say the unusually low turnout was a result of a boycott by those supporting independence. So according to that vote, I guess it went through, but I'm not sure exactly how that all ended up. I don't know. I don't know what good it is to boycott a vote, because you're going to lose if you don't go out. We talked the other day about some of the health trends here in the U.S. This is another quick note. Recent study says more than 1 in 10 are obese. Around 604 million adults and 108 million children are obese. That's, of course, bad numbers, especially with the kids. According to a study by the Institute for Health Metrics and Evaluation, more than 10% of the global population. You know what country has the highest rate of obese children? It's the United States. 12.7% of the children in the U.S. are considered obese. And, of course, they have a way of measuring that, I guess. It's body mass index, I think, something like that. But so not a good number there. Another story we talked about this week and is a big story is, of course, some of the migrants coming into Europe and some of the issues they're having there. The EU court has threatened, made a threat over the refugee snub in a few nations. The EU threatened legal action against the Czech Republic, Hungary, and Poland for refusing to take in any refugees under the EU plan to relocate 160,000 migrants. The three countries face fines and sanctions. So whenever you're part of the EU, you are definitely a part of the EU. You've got to follow their rules and regulations. And when people and nations try to be somewhat independent, that's the issue they run into. They become they get subject to fines and things like that. Over the weekend, a lot of times people like to stay up a little bit and have a later night. That may not be the best for you. This is another quick note. It says staying up late on the weekends is bad for your heart. A study presented at the Associated Professional Sleep Society's annual meeting. Do people sleep in those meetings? It seems like they should. That means you'd be doing great, I guess, if you slept in the Professional Sleep Society's meeting. Professional sleeper. They found that each hour of social jet lag, as they call it, staying up late and sleeping in on the weekends was linked with an 11% higher risk of heart disease, along with fatigue and worse moods. So that's something, that's a term that I think has been coined recently, social jet lag. You know how it is if you get off of a long flight, you don't feel well. Typically, you're just a little out of it. Well, social jet lag is when you feel that way because you stayed up and didn't get enough sleep. So that's an interesting study there. I think it's fascinating that there is an association of professional sleep societies. So all kinds of things out there. A couple of quick notes I thought you might find interesting. Some economic news to talk about here. Etsy, have you ever bought anything off of them? They're cutting 15% of their workforce. On Wednesday, the company said it is cutting another 140 jobs, or 15% of its current workforce. That's in addition to trims it made in May when it let go of another 90 people. Etsy's business has been struggling. It reported $421,000 in losses during the first quarter of the year, and down from more than $1 million the same quarter the year before. So they're not doing too well. I haven't been on Etsy much. It's kind of like a site where you can buy things. I think a lot of it is like arts and crafts and things like that, or at least maybe that's how it started, and there's other things there. But anyway, they're not doing great right now. So even in the online communities, as far as trying to have a viable business of selling things, sometimes those don't always work out either. Here's an interesting write-up about kids working. It says, kids today, they don't work summer jobs the way they used to. That's a famous expression, right? People say kids today. They just aren't, don't do things like they used to do them years ago. Probably every generation says that, and it's probably always true to some extent. But they say as summer 2017 begins, America's teenagers are far less likely to be acquiring the kinds of experiences that people in the past found so useful. Once a teenage rite of passage, the summer job is vanishing. So that's you've probably had a summer job when you were a teenager. If you're past that point of life, I certainly did and learned a lot doing it. They say instead of baling hay, scooping ice cream, or stocking supermarket shelves in July and August, today's teens are more likely to be enrolled in summer school, doing volunteer work to burnish their college credentials, or just hanging out with friends. For many, not working is a choice. For some others, it reflects a lack of opportunities where they live, often in lower-income urban areas. They sometimes find that older workers hold the low-skill jobs that once would have been available to them. So there's different reasons why some teens aren't working. Sometimes they're just not a job around, and that's not a great feeling if you want to work and you can't. But then in some cases, they choose not to, or as they say, in some cases, the older generation has taken those jobs. In July 1986, 57% of Americans aged 16 to 19 were employed. The proportion stayed over 50% until 2002, when it began dropping steadily. By last July, only 36% were working. So that's a pretty good drop off from 1986 until today. And I guess really 2002 was still over 50%. So the last 15 years here or so, it's really dropped. Economists and labor market observers worry that falling teen employment will deprive them of valuable work experience and of opportunities to encounter people of different ethnic, social, and cultural backgrounds. But the longer-term trend for teen employment is down and likely to stay that way for several reasons. So there's a few reasons here that this write-up thinks that the teen employment is down. For one, they say teenagers and their parents are increasingly aware of the value of a college education. A result is that more kids are spending summers volunteering or studying to prepare for college and compete for slots at competitive schools. In July 1986, just 12% of Americans aged 16 to 19 were taking summer classes. 30 years later, that share has risen to 42%. That's interesting because it used to be, or at least it used to seem to be, that summer school was for people that just maybe struggled with something during the school year and needed to improve their grades or improve their understanding of math or whatever they were looking at. But here they're saying some people are doing it to try to get ahead. So I guess that could be possible. They say teens who do want to work can find that older workers are standing in the way. That's another reason maybe they're not working as much. The summer jobs teens used to take, flipping burgers, unpacking produce at the grocery store, cashiering at the mall, are increasingly filled by older, often foreign-born workers. So that's interesting. And, of course, a lot of those malls are closing up, too, so those jobs aren't there. In 2000 to 2001, teens accounted for 12% of retail workers. Researchers at Drexel University found 15 years later, it was just 7%. Over the same period, the teenage share of restaurant and hotel jobs fell from 21% to 16%. So those jobs are probably being taken by older people or, you know, in some case, maybe the teens just aren't applying for them. You know, it's kind of a chicken or the egg, which came first situation. You know, are they hiring older adults because they need the jobs or are there just not enough teens applying so they have to hire somebody? Hard to say. But it is interesting. They talk about some of the retail jobs in the mall. You probably, if you've been in a mall recently, you see those kiosks that they have set up where they sell a variety of things. And it looks like a pretty boring job because the person's usually just sitting there on the chair and kind of biding their time, hoping somebody stops. If it's not one of those kiosks where they're very aggressive and they're trying to, you know, come out and interact with you, which I don't like those, but you know, you see the people sitting at those other kiosks, and they're just on their phones usually, you know, doing something and getting paid for it, I guess. So maybe somebody stops by and buys something from them. I don't know. I don't know how that goes. But I thought, boy, that would be a boring job, wouldn't it? You know, to just sit there all day and kind of scroll around on your phone. Even if you wanted to buy something from the kiosk, it seems like if somebody's sitting there looking very disinterested, yeah, it would probably not be as prone to go over there. So you do see some younger people and older people in those jobs at those malls. They say Americans increasingly keep working even as a near traditional retirement age these days, sometimes taking entry-level jobs to provide income as they transition to full-time retirement. Foreign-born workers have also increased their share of jobs in hotels and restaurants that require little education. That's probably true. Probably depends on what part of the country you live in. I've had that happen before where I've gone to a restaurant and the person behind the counter didn't speak any English other than knowing how to count the money or know how to take the order in terms of like what number you would order. So that can happen. And maybe that's why there's fewer jobs. That could be a reason. They say many employers view older workers as more reliable, more likely to show up on time or at all, which is probably true, and to better know how to handle customers, coworkers, and suppliers. Another reason maybe that the teens aren't working in the summer jobs as much as they used to. They say many school districts have lengthened their academic years to try to boost student achievement. In the process, they're shrinking summer vacation and the chance for teens to find work even if they want to. School years now often don't end well into June and resume before Labor Day. So that's true, I suppose, particularly if a lot of times the jobs teens would go after, depending on where they live, would be more the tourist type jobs, where a tourist industry opens up for the summer and then the teens have some opportunities there. But if you're not getting out of school in time, that would be difficult. They say with a shorter summer off from school, students may be less inclined to get a summer job and employers may be less inclined to hire them. Drexel's Harrington, who is talking about some of these things from a study, laments the decline of summer employment for teens. In addition to providing on-the-job experience, summer work has proved especially valuable for poor urban youth, or poor rural youth, too, I might add. Harrington cites research showing that city teens who participate in summer jobs programs achieve higher school attendance and academic performance and are less likely to commit crimes. That is true, I'm sure. If you're actually working and earning money, you don't have the time to go out there and get into difficulties. And a lot of crimes are committed because people are trying to get money in some fashion. So that would definitely be a help. The value of summer work is hardly confined to American teens. Emily Lyons, who's a CEO of a media group which provides models and dancers for corporate events, recalls a summer job that wasn't exactly pleasant. She said the job stunk, literally. She spent the summer of 1998 working part-time on an Ontario garlic farm, picking, sorting, and packing the pungent plants. She says it was hard, dirty, and strong-smelling work, but she said you have to be able to wear many hats and be willing to get your hands dirty. You can't be too good for any role. Lyons carried those lessons and experiences from other youthful jobs as a nanny, a hotel housekeeper, and a blueberry picker into a career as an entrepreneur and eventually to her current post as a chief executive. She said, every job along the way taught me different lessons that I carry with me today. So I think that's some good insight there from that lady who is doing well today as an executive and credits a lot of her success to those different jobs and the lessons that she learned. So interesting to look at those numbers changing there. Not as many teens working today. It's interesting, too. I just don't think it's a good idea for somebody to go through their teen years and then up into their early 20s without having worked jobs. That you could, you know, maybe have a good education, but at the same time, the experience that you get on a job is just really valuable. It was for me, and so I would think it would be for a lot of people. And plus, how do you know what you like to do or what you don't like to do or what you're good at or not good at if you're not out there working and figuring some things out? And also just learning to show up on time, like they say. Show up on time, actually be consistent. It's amazing how far you can go in life. That's a major issue. Well, there's, of course, unemployment is actually pretty low in the U.S. right now. I know it depends on how you look at the numbers. There's quite a few that aren't in the workforce, or, you know, there's different ways of calculating some of those numbers. It's probably not as good as people think it is, but there are some jobs out there in some places. And in some places in the United States, there's too many jobs. Too many jobs, not enough people to do them. And this becomes an issue as well. This is a write-up from the Washington Post. They say in this part of the Midwest, the problem is there's too many jobs. And they're writing about a place in Indiana. They say each day at Zimmer Biomet headquarters, machinists on one robot-assisted factory floors churn out about 3,000 metallic knee parts. Who would have thought that would be a company? But it is. They make all these different parts that replace parts going bad in humans. It says they are facing pressure to crank up the pace as the population ages and demand soars. A lot of the industries that seem to be doing pretty well are health care related, and this would be one of those. As they say, the population is aging, people's bodies are breaking down for a variety of reasons, and so they need parts, metallic knee parts and other parts. That's a lot of knees to be making. They say, but the artificial bone giant, this company, is grappling with a steep downside of the nation's low unemployment rate. It is struggling to find enough workers despite offering some of the region's best pay and benefits. They have 40 positions that they're ready to fill at this company. Maybe not after this Washington Post article, but when they wrote it, they did. And they haven't been able to fill them. They say other manufacturers in the same county, which is home to roughly one-third of global orthopedic device production, are running into the same problem. The lack of laborers not only threatens to stunt the growth of these companies, experts warn, but it could also force them to decamp their hometown in search of workers. So because they can't fill positions locally and the demand for these products are growing, they might have to leave the communities. And, of course, they employ a lot of people within the community. So it's a really strange situation that they find themselves in. If they left and went somewhere else, they could fill the positions, but then, of course, they would decimate that town probably. They say with the U.S. unemployment rate at a 16-year low of 4.3%, again, depends how you look at those numbers, I guess, employers across the country are dealing with a dearth of potential hires. Economists say that talent shortages are growing constraints on the country's economic expansion, especially as millions of baby boomers enter retirement. You have a whole generation entering retirement. In a lot of cases, they were skilled, knew how to do the jobs, knew how to do them well. And so where are the people coming from that are going to take their spots that are skilled in these different industries? They say the shortage is particularly problematic in places such as Kosciusko County, hopefully said that right, where the unemployment rate rests at just 2%. Of the county's 41,136 adults who can work, 40,311 are employed, according to the government statistics, that's a pretty good number. This region, a land of clear lakes, duck farms, and medical device makers, it's like an IQ test. Which one doesn't fit in there? Clear lakes, duck farms, medical device makers. They say escaped the industrial decline that rocked other communities throughout the Rust Belt. It prospered thanks to a local industry that proved largely immune to competition from China and Mexico. So I guess they don't have a lot of competition for their products, and so the businesses are booming there, and they're just trying now to find enough people to actually do the jobs. So it is an interesting dilemma that they're running into. They say the industry's bind, and this is interesting too. The industry's bind, they're talking about orthopedic sales, which is growing by about 4% each year. But the bind is also tightened by a common misconception that factory work is dirty or inferior to career paths a four-year degree will open, he said. And this is the one of the guys talking there. And he said, the machinists certified in high school or local technical programs can step into jobs that pay about $50,000 annually, and that's roughly the state's median wage, and it can go up from there. So they're pretty good paying jobs, but there is this thought out there that, well, it's dirty, dingy factory work, even though I think the factories in some cases are different today than they used to be. But that's sort of the thought. It's, you know, beneath what people might aspire to. But it's not a bad job, and it pays pretty well. It says they can work up from there and make more money. They can seek a higher education. And some of the companies in town help cover that expense if people want to go to school. Tom Till, director of Ivy Tech Community College's Orthopedic and Advanced Manufacturing Training Center, said that Zimmer Biomet and other local firms offered to pay the tuition of his first group of high school manufacturing trainees who graduated last month with a machining certification. So that sounds like a pretty good deal if that's something that a person would be interested in. You can come out of high school certified, and then you've got these companies that are going to pay your tuition if you go work there and then you do some schooling. But the problem is, they say only a handful of students signed up for the program. They couldn't get anybody to sign up. Not many. And there's only three seniors in the group, and none of them actually want to work in that industry because they just want to go. They want to go to college. So they say the stigma comes from history. People have grandparents who worked in dirty, dingy factories, but that truly is not where our manufacturing is today. And so they say there's been a lot of change in some of those industries, but people don't want to do it. The younger people don't want to do it. So that sounds like actually a pretty good career path in some ways, especially if you can continue your education. So that's an interesting problem to have there. That's Reddit from the Washington Post. In this part of the Midwest, the problem is there's too many jobs that people don't want to fill. The younger people don't want to fill. They just did a U.S. Census, by the way, related to this. These are the largest gaining counties in the United States from July 1st, 2015 to 2016. And one of them is Hillsborough County, Florida. That one's growing. Dallas County, Texas, not a surprise. Orange County, Florida. Bexar County, Texas. Riverside County, California. Tarrant County, Texas. King County in Washington. Clark County, Nevada. Harris County, Texas. And the top one is Maricopa County in Arizona. That's where the population is rising the most over the last census. People are trying to get in there. A lot of them in Texas. And Texas seems to be doing pretty well. So that's where some people are heading. And that's one of the issues also in some of these Midwestern places. People aren't as excited to move there. There's not as much in the town. They don't want to move into a smaller town, some of the younger people, and kind of put down their roots and be in that area. So that's what some of the commenters anyway said about why people don't want to fill those jobs. They don't want to move to those smaller towns in the Midwest. So it is interesting to see, but if people do want to work and they have some aptitude, obviously you'd need some aptitude to do these things. There's some jobs out there, apparently. So that's a look at some of what's going on with the economy here in the United States. Make sure you listen for the Key of David program coming up here in a bit. Also, the Trumpet Daily Radio Show this weekend with Jeremiah Jacques filling in for Stephen Fleury. Also, stop and check out thetrumpet.com. Ex-Barclays boss found guilty of fraud. You can read about that. And, of course, also Watch Jerusalem and the Trumpet Hour Week in Review program. All coming up this weekend, quite a bit to keep you informed here at KPCG. That's all the time that we do have for today. Thanks for joining us here on Trumpet Radio Live. And again, you can follow us on Twitter at KPCGFM. Send comments to comments@kpcg.fm. We appreciate those. For myself, Dwight Falk, have a great weekend, and we'll talk to you again on Monday.
You're listening to Trumpet Radio, 101.3 KPCG.